The Cavalcade of Kings. Edward the First, Episode 2. Edward had just given two priceless gifts to his Welsh subjects, those of peace and prosperity. He had also given them his son as their prince, and for the first time for many years the land was quiet and free from strife. Now we come to Scotland, which was the greatest trouble of Edward's reign. Amongst the rival claimants to the vacant throne, only two had any real claim. They were John Balliol and Robert Bruce, both of whom were closely related to the Scottish royal family. The Scottish nobles referred the dispute to Edward of England, who, accompanied by his army, went to the castle of Berwick, where Bruce and Balliol and the nobles awaited him.
My lords of Scotland, ye ask of me a decision in the dispute which has arisen between John Balliol and Robert Bruce, who each claim to be the rightful successor to the Scottish crown. And 'tis agreed. I will hear each man in turn, but first each must swear to abide by my decision and to serve whomsoever I choose as king, loyally and well. Is that agreed, John Balliol, and you, Robert Bruce?
Aye, your majesty.
'Tis well. Bruce shall make known his rights to the throne first. Stand ye forth, Robert Bruce, and speak the truth.
I am ready, your majesty.
By what rights do ye lay claim to the crown of Scotland?
By the right of legitimate succession, your majesty. Being as I am the grandson of King David by his second daughter, Isabel, who married Robert Bruce, fourth Lord of Annandale, thus laying the foundation of the royal house of Bruce.
You were appointed one of the 15 regents of Scotland who ruled during Alexander's minority. Is not that so?
'Tis so, your majesty.
And you also led the Scottish forces in company with Balliol and Comyn to the assistance of the English at the Battle of Lewes, and suffered imprisonment for your loyal service to England. Later, you were appointed Sheriff of Cumberland Castle and Constable of Carlisle Castle as a reward for your brave deed.
Your majesty's memory serves you well.
Edward of England never forgets a brave man's services. But even so, the memory of them will not be permitted to tilt the scales of justice in the matter of the present dispute. And that being so, I will now hear John Balliol. Stand ye forth, John Balliol, and speak ye also the truth.
I am ready, sire.
Speak. By what right do you lay claim to the Scottish throne?
I also claim it, as does Robert Bruce, by the right to legitimate succession, being as I am the great-grandson of King David the First of Scotland, by his eldest daughter, Princess Margaret.
The great-grandson of the eldest daughter of King David has a greater claim than the grandson of the second daughter. Verily, methinks that thou, John Balliol, are the rightful claimant to the crown.
'Twould seem, sire, that you've made your decision.
Yea, but before I give voice to it, I would ask one question. Will the future King of Scotland accept the King of England as his Lord Paramount and do homage to him as the Dukes of Normandy have done to the Kings of France?
Edward of England asks much from the future King of Scotland.
You quibble, Robert Bruce, and yet 'tis a condition which you have accepted for many years.
A condition which I have accepted, sire?
Yea. Have you not paid homage to my late father?
Yea, sire, but only for my English possession.
Thou art proud, Robert Bruce. Too proud. It does not sit well upon thy shoulders, this arrogance. For I could even now at this juncture claim the Scottish throne myself and annex it to England as I have annexed the Kingdom of Wales.
'Twould be the action of a usurper, your majesty, and my people would rise against thee.
Nay, not a usurper, good Bruce. Hast forgotten that in the days of Edward, the son of Alfred, the Scots were in fear of the Danes, and their king chose Edward the Elder as their father and their lord. I fear me they have not been very dutiful sons.
Your majesty forgets, perchance, that the Danes no longer ravage the land of the Scots.
And so they imagine they can do without the protection which England can give them.
Scotland is no longer a weak nation, and she can well defend herself.
Then you spurn her protection?
Nay, sire, for I am one who does not underestimate the advantages of the protection of such a powerful nation as England. But I refuse to acknowledge her king as overlord of Scotland, for by so doing, I would bring my people to serfdom.
I will say no more to thee, Robert Bruce.
As you will, sir.
And now, John Balliol, I will ask of thee the same question which Robert Bruce has just answered. Will ye accept the crown of Scotland by favor of the King of England and accept him as your overlord?
I will, Your Majesty, for I am thankful of the protection which England can give Scotland against her enemies.
Then, mark ye all, there is my decision. John Balliol will receive his crown by the King of England's favor and permission. He will be crowned at Scone in the old stone chair which rests in the abbey there and which has been used for centuries at the coronation of her Scottish king. After the coronation, the great seal of Scotland will be broken into four pieces and placed in the English treasury.
In truth, Your Majesty, I envy not the future King of Scotland, nor his nobles, nor his people who now exchange their hard-won freedom for the yoke of bondage.
Silence, Robert Bruce. My claim is a just one, and by Holy Edward, whose crown I wear, I will have my rights, yea, and die, if need be, in maintaining them.
Balliol was crowned king at Scone in 1292, but later found himself completely under Edward's thumb. In 1295, he revolted. Edward invaded Scotland and defeated the Scottish troops. He took Balliol prisoner and forced him to surrender his crown. Edward also brought back from Scotland to England the ancient stone upon which the Scottish kings had been crowned for centuries. We now find Edward conversing with his wife Margaret in London.
Edward, I'm afraid the trouble in Scotland will not end with the imprisonment of King John. The Scottish people are a strong, determined, warlike race, and they will always resent English interference.
I have subdued Wales, and I will subdue Scotland, Margaret, have no fear.
What is this ancient stone which ye have brought back with ye, Edward?
It is believed that this stone is that which Jacob used as a pillow when he saw a vision of angels, and every Scottish king has sat upon it when he was crowned.
And what are you going to do with it?
I'll have it built up into a new coronation chair for future English monarchs. Even now it rests in Westminster Abbey, from which holy place, and it pleases God, it shall never be removed.
And think ye the Scots will accept the removal of their sacred relic? No, Edward. They will hate ye and the English 1,000 times more for taking it and all it stands for from them.
Oh, it is but a stone, Margaret, and of no consequence.
No, Edward, it is far more than that. It is the seat of their kings, the veritable throne of Scotland which ye have carried over the border. And mark what I say. They will rise amongst this warlike people, men who will give body and soul to regain the independence ye have taken from them.
Later, the Scots rose in revolt under the leadership of Sir William Wallace, who drove the English out of Scotland. In 1298, Edward fought against Wallace at the Battle of Falkirk and defeated the Scots. Wallace fled, but years later was captured and hanged in London. In 1306, Robert Bruce, a grandson of the competitor for the throne against John Balliol, incited the people to rise and crown him King of Scotland. Edward found he had to conquer Scotland for a third time. He was now an old man, broken in health, but in his fierce wrath he took the field in person against Bruce.
We are nearing Carlisle, Edward, my son, and I must mount my horse, as befits a king who leads his troops to battle.
Father, I pray ye not to think of doing so. You are ill and have not the strength to sit upon your horse.
More plague upon the weakness which causes me to ride in this cursed litter like a stricken old woman. Come, a horse, I tell you, and let me die upon its back instead of on my own.
I beg of you, my father, not to attempt to mount your horse.
I mounted it before, when my ribs had been broken. I and rode to battle and routed the rebel dogs who set themselves against me. Ah, my son, 3 times have I set out to conquer Scotland. 2 times I have succeeded,
This will be the third time. I wonder what the issue will be.
The English will succeed again, Father. They cannot lose. Did you not cause me, your son, and 270 of the young nobility to be knighted? The trees in the temple gardens were cut down to make room for our tents, and we watched our armor all night, according to ancient custom.
Aye, and at the public feast which followed, we all swore by heaven and by two gold swans which my minstrels placed on the table to avenge the death of Comyn and to punish the false Bruce.
We did, my father.
Then, my son, I charge ye, in case I should die before I accomplish my vow, to go forth with your knights and the troops and vanquish the rebel dogs who devastate the land, and not to bury my bones until you have accomplished your mission.
I swear, my father.
'Tis well. And now on to Carlisle.